Hello everyone for this second session of this year's Winter Congress. For this one, I have three presenters with me. These are Silke, Adrian, and Mehdi. And they are all journalists, and they're going to talk about OmniSec, InfoGuard, and the Secret Service within the Secret Service. Sounds a little bit like James Bond to me. But maybe I'm wrong, and they are going to teach me, and tell you about that. Stage is yours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. So I'm Mehdi. I'm a Western Schweizer journalist. I'm a freelance journalist for Le Temps and RTS as well. And a bit passionate about the secret services and how Switzerland is digging into this mess. So what we are going to talk to you tonight is about the inner story of the crypto age stuff. I was working on this at the past for, I think, 10 years on the crypto age stuff and how Switzerland was involved in this mess until the crypto leaks in 2021. And we were, from the beginning, pretty sure that the crypto AG was just the edge of the iceberg. It wasn't the only company. And we just started with basic questions, how the secret was kept for so long. And it was just the beginning of the investigation, but it was too big for me. So that's why I rang the phone to Adrian and Silke in Zurich to have like a national power. And because I was reading what they published before, and they were just like the perfect partner in crimes to investigate the crypto leaks. So what we decided is, I mean, just the basic first question is how the secret was kept for so long. And because we knew from the beginning that some politicians knew from the past that crypto AG was infiltrated by the secret services. We didn't have the actual proofs, but we knew that you have like kind of a connection, a political connection, trying to keep the secret. So we started to investigate into the Bundesrat, and then we figure out that you have like two key persons, which is Peter Regli, who was running the secret services from the 90s until the 2000 years. And then you have like Urs von Däniken, who is the head of the FedPol. And the two guys were really close friends, and they were just like working together as firewalls. They had the connections with the foreign secret services, and then they decided to they were responsible to give the information to the Bundesrat and the parliament. So they were, both of them were just like really close, and they were the only two persons to keep the secrets for 10 years actually. So that's why that we figure out in this investigation that we understand that Peter Regli and Urs von Däniken were the key players. And then when you look at these two figures, you understand also that crypto was not alone. It was like the perfect victim of all this. But you have like a kind of a connection, a web connections. And Switzerland was really willing to be the best in the cryptographic industry. Crypto was the best, but she relied on sisters companies like InfoGuard, like OmniSec, like etc. So that was a kind of in the 90s, it was like kind of all web and connections, political and economical. So that's why our second questions raised on the sister companies. So Adrienne, maybe you can add some.
Thank you for handing over to me. My name is Adrienne. I'm a journalist for the République, and I'm sorry that I smashed the session before. There was a confusion with the links for the sessions, but now fine. So here we see, as Mehdi said, it's a spider web. There are many companies around crypto HE, and our focus was okay, let's put also spotlight on them. So there was OmniSec and Gretag, and what was very interesting for us was basically InfoGuard, because InfoGuard is a cybersecurity company today. It's still active, it still operates. And so we thought maybe we can find some sources from back then and to reach them out. And also, yeah, so for the record, maybe if someone listens from InfoGuard, who's working for this company, everything we say now is really referring to the past. We don't talk about the present. So just for the record, otherwise we get some nice emails on Monday. And so we had a look on InfoGuard after CryptoLeaks was out in February 2020. Some media outlets like Aargauer Zeitung and Inside IT were also focusing on InfoGuard, and they basically looked at the company connections based on the commercial registry data. And of course, there was a strong link because it was a sister company of Crypto AG. And also, yeah, so we knew there is a strong link, but we wanted to follow another method. We said, okay, but what exactly was InfoGuard selling? What products were they selling? And so we followed our new method. It's called follow the technology. So we said, okay, let's see, maybe we find something there. And then, yeah, we started with what we find in the web, what everyone does, open source intelligence, I would say. So we found this document from 1993 from a subcommittee on economic policy, trade and environment. There were some Swiss companies listed, which were for like strategic interest in the commercial encryption market. And you can see there is also ETH Zurich listed, and there's also InfoGuard listed. So we thought, okay, they were in the spotlight of the United States, in the focus of the United States. And of course, if you start to make some investigations about this topic, you end up here very quickly on Crypto Museum, which is the Wikipedia, I would say, for everything about encryption. Was super valuable. Yes, basically the first three paragraphs you find there, and also in Operation Rubicon, were kind of made some strong claims, I would say. So you can see InfoGuard became a joint venture between Crypto HE and Ascom. You also can read that it was decided by the CNA and BND that InfoGuard would sell readable equipment to all customers, with the exception of Switzerland, Germany, Sweden, and commercial banks. So you can see they made some strong claims about what InfoGuard was supposed to sell. And readable equipment means devices with weak encryption algorithms, and probably also some backdoors installed. And there was also, you can see there's on two a little footnote. If you go on this footnote, you can see that they say in practice no exceptions were made, and InfoGuard even sold readable equipment to the three accepted countries. So what do we know? We know that Switzerland was also a customer and also got some readable equipment. Okay, then we thought like, okay, we need to contact now the authors of Crypto Museum, which what we did. And that was, and still are, Paul Reuvers and Mark Simons, both self-employed engineers from the Netherlands. They were really, really helpful. They also got a copy from the Minerva document, but they were not supposed to share the document with us because it stays among a small circle of journalists and some institutions and some scientists, something I personally criticize a lot because I think it's in the interest of the public to get the copies out or to share it at least with some other journalists as well. But we got what we wanted at the end. We got from different sources the paragraph about what is like the paragraphs on in the Minerva document about InfoGuard. So what was the plan with InfoGuard at the end? Okay, so the plan was to sell readable equipment, but we didn't know exactly what. You also find something about that on the cryptomuseum.com about this chip theory, HC3400, readable drop-in crypto chip. And they say it was decided that InfoGuard would sell crypto-enabled radios and that they would contain crypto HC's drop-in crypto chip. So, okay, we thought, we knew now there is this chip and there were these devices and InfoGuard has to sell that. But we were still thinking, okay, we need more proof. We need more evidence. And so we were lucky because in the end of October, there was this program of the Dutch magazine Argos from the investigative journalist Huub Jaspers, who basically could prove that these chips were implemented in this crypto-enabled radios. And also that he could show us which kind of model it was, SE660. And also we figured out that these radios basically were, that the hardware was from Ascom. And so it has to be an InfoGuard product at the end, which was also proven by Huub Jaspers as well, and also by Jörg Spöndli, the leading engineer we were talking to later. So you can see that in these three paragraphs that these radios were also sold to the UN court as well. So yeah, at the end, we reached out Mr. Jörg Spöndli himself. He was also willing to talk to us. And he confirmed that they were engineering this series of 660 crypto-enabled radios. Sorry, all these expressions were kind of new to me. And he also said that he had to design and develop the previous model of this drop-in chip, of this crypto chip. So he was not involved in this one, but he also said that the previous one also contained a weak encryption algorithm as well. And when we asked him, okay, what do you think now about the 3400 series chips? He said, die wurden damals bei der Sprachverschlüsselung eingesetzt. Ob die sauber waren, da will ich meine Hand nicht ins Feuer legen. We got later from another source some paragraphs from the BND papers where it was clear that this topic about InfoGuard was a hot issue between the CIA and the BND. Because it was all about the question which kind of products should be delivered to Switzerland, Germany, France, and Sweden. And at the end, as we know, the CIA won the fight. So except the banks, everyone should get readable equipment. It was the end of the Cold War, a new era starting. And yeah, so we know now, I mean, eavesdropping and siphoning and surveillance is now kind of in some commercial products, the standard, unfortunately. But let's go back to the 1988 or the end of the Cold War. So between 1998 and 1991, these 3 years, we know now that it was the intention that InfoGuard should deliver and sell these kind of products to commercial customers. That was the purpose. That was why InfoGuard was built for. We unfortunately don't know who were their customers. So it was always said Kaimu and banks and so on. And also we heard from other sources there was about some chapters of foreign countries from hostile countries, foreign companies from hostile countries. But we still don't know the real targets. So that is where an investigation has had to stop. We know that InfoGuard was, as far as we know, InfoGuard was not active anymore than after that until 2001. So it was basically only registered in the commercial registry data, but it was not active. In 2001, there was a reset. So the whole era from 2001 to 2018, where there was the management buyout, we just heard hints and stuff, but there's nothing proof, no evidence, nothing we found. And yeah, today they are a cybersecurity company, so they changed their focus more to consulting. And yeah, so the remaining question was a bit why did the Rundschau SRF not report on that? Yeah, that was a bit a question. So I think, or we can discuss that later. I think that's also because InfoGuard is still active and they also have their watchdogs and try to a bit, to intimate the journalist as well. But yeah, we went out, we published this piece because we thought this, the public needs to know that. And we published this piece at the day of the presentation of the GPDEL report. As you see, this is Alfred Heer, who was presenting that in November 2020. And yeah, to put the spotlight on, and there's the press conference and the story continues here. So I hand over to Silke now.
Thank you very much. Just quickly switch the slides in between. There you go. Yeah, another man in a gray suit. My name is Silke. I'm a part of the trio that Adrien, Mehdi and I formed. I'm a investigative reporter based in Zurich. And Mehdi already said it. You called us on to join forces, and we did so. And one of my tasks was indeed to focus on another company that we looked into of the whole network of the companies. And it all started, it all became evident what this company played a role in on November 10th during a session by the Swiss that was transferred to the Swiss Parliament channel on YouTube. So it was shortly after 3 p.m. when the camera pointed at this person that you're seeing here, Mr. Waldsmann, a member of the Council of States and also party member of the SVP, wearing his neat gray suit and his, don't forget to look at his golden Bernese bear in the buttonhole. And he read from his notes saying, during our investigation, we were assured that the devices purchased from Crypto AG were systematically checked and that the Swiss authorities had never received weak encryption devices from this supplier. On the other hand, defective encryption technology was proven in the devices of another supplier. And obviously, you, Adrien, Mehdi and I, we were listening, we tuned into that YouTube channel, and we did so along with many other investigative reporters in the US. You can see though over 2,000 views there that were registered by YouTube. And we since pursued that question of which company this could be, because it and during that meeting, no name was put out there. And we did so for one very simple reason, because the implications are huge. According to this report that was then presented by this parliamentary commission, it is about a Swiss manufacturer that supplied in translation unsafe equipment to the federal government and to two large companies. So we already knew that there is a company out there, name wasn't stated, we knew what this company did. So it was about us to do the reporting, which we did through different methods. And eventually we solved it. So at the very end of November, Alfred Heer, the president of the GPDL, he had to confirm to République, Le Temps and Rundschau and other colleagues that it is the Swiss company called OmniSec. We published our findings by the end of November, along with our colleagues from the Swiss broadcaster SRF, specifically the Rundschau, a Swiss SRF news magazine, and reported on it. that OmniSec is said to have supplied several Swiss security agents with insecure machines. And on top of that, according to Rundschau investigations, UBS, the Swiss bank, is or was one of the companies mentioned to have bought manipulated devices. It's important to note for us that years before, in 2013, the Swiss weekly Die Wochenzeitung, WOZ, had already reported on OmniSec. And the reporter, Daniel Stern, interviewed a range of men involved in OmniSec, and he collected information from commercial registries, and he followed the money to some Caribbean islands and to the Wall Street in New York City. And what he also did, he tried to talk to Uli Maurer, a then professor and still today of cryptology at ETH Zurich. And we basically followed Daniel Stern's lead. So we also followed the money to the Caribbean islands. We also went to Wall Street. We also contacted lawyers in the US. We talked to a whole lot of different men involved with OmniSec or being familiar with OmniSec. And we also contacted the professor of cryptology, Uli Maurer, at the ETH Zurich. Because we knew that he, Uli Maurer, had acted as an OmniSec advisor from 1988 to 2015. So basically only recently. What we got from both Uli Maurer and ETH Zurich were lengthy statements. They wrote a lot but said nothing. Thus, their roles remain unclear, which we also try to make very clear in the report we put out there by the end of November called Das Innerste Auge, the Inner Eye. What became very clear when reporting and then publishing this investigation was the deeper one digs, the more evidence can be found that Switzerland, on the one hand, profited as a free rider from worldwide wiretapping operations, but on the other hand, was also a victim of espionage itself and by Swiss companies. Thus, not only did crypto AG's sister company InfoGuard, that you, Adrian, did talk about, originally have the mandate to sell manipulated devices to the private sector, it is also clear that the encryption company OmniSec, which until then had maintained a very clear image, helped to eavesdrop on the Swiss state. And this is only possible because we, when in our work, we collaborated, we used methods of open source intelligence to collect information that was already out there, e.g. Reported by our colleague of Die Wochenzeitung, Daniel Stern, because we mined data as much as we could mine people, and because we followed the money, as you rightly put it, Adrian, as well as we followed the technology. Nevertheless, there are still questions which remain. And those are, who was the other large company affected besides UBS? We have no clue up until today. Well, maybe we have clues, but we don't have evidence, put it that way. We don't have evidence. We're lacking in evidence. Why did the Federal Council continue to acquire OmniSec devices despite these incidents? Was the government, the Swiss government, the Swiss national government, was this eavesdropped on? In which service? Was OmniSec acting? Was it really the Americans or also other foreign intelligence services? Who ordered them to do what they did? And again, what was the involvement of the professor and the ETH Zurich? All in all, we believed, and we made this point very clear end of November, and it hasn't changed. There is enough material out there which provide more than enough information for an in-depth investigation. But this is up to politics, and apparently for now they haven't acted yet. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know. Well, thank you for this insight. I'm not sure if I really wanted to have it. Now I know the world is not a secure place anymore. Well, it probably hasn't been. So for the people in the listening live, you can ask questions in the chat. Maybe I start with one of mine. So first, and obvious, maybe I said already, but I missed it. So if there is weak crypto, who would have interest in having that? I mean, it makes only sense. Well, there are two ways to deliver weak crypto. One is because you don't know better, and the other one is because you want to be able to listen, right? So do you have clues, or does it become clear who would have interests in weak crypto in that sense?
Yes, I mean, it depends. I mean, you really have to go back to the psychology of the countries at the Cold War. I mean, it's a heritage. We can really, really clearly see in our investigation that you have like a heritage from the Cold War. And then it depends of the state and the relationship, and it's like diplomatical. So it's a mean to make pressure or to give orders. I mean, if the CIA or the NSA is asking Crypto AG, yes, we need to target these countries, maybe this company will cooperate, but it's right for a certain time in a certain context, then it can switch. But I mean, the link between the company and the NSA or the CIA is still there. So you have a kind of a relationship which is kind of ambivalent. It's not like we are good friends, we are working together. It's more depending of the countries of and the interests, I would say.
You know what? And to add on that, I mean, this is something that we have been told from various sources. If you would like to, you know, be invited to the table as a secret service, especially as a rather small secret service of a rather tiny country, you have to bring something as a gift, so to speak, to the table, or not, maybe not as a gift, but something to trade. And your currency is not money, your currency is information. So even though you as a country or as a secret service of a particular country might not be interested, maybe your partner is, and that is the gift you can give or the good that you can exchange.
And what happens from what we understood from our sources is that the relationship between Switzerland and the CIA is not a honeymoon. I mean, they are not friends. I mean, they just want, I mean, if Switzerland wants to trade some stuff, as Silke just said, or want to protect their interest, she has to give something back. And it's not like a really equal relationship. It's just like, okay, we have this, you have that. And you try to dig your journey into this. I mean, it's the same as the political reaction. I mean, you cannot say this is wrong, etc., etc. You really have to be in this balance of protecting interest and then, of course, open up to something different.
Yeah, and to add on that as well, you can see in this first document I was showing about the export, like from this committee, you can see that in this document is also mentioned that Switzerland was already manufacturing like some of the AT&T telco company stuff, devices, already facsimile devices. And then they were also asking themselves about why Switzerland, and it's also because of the export restriction rules, because there were no like strict rules about that. They never were. There's still somehow not, I would say, they're still not existing, but that was actually because of the dual use regulation on the United States. Basically, Switzerland had also this part to design them as well. So there was already a strong link you can see in the 90s. But yeah, it's a good question. Why weak encryption algorithms? I mean, OmniSec was supposed to be a Swiss company, and Swiss. I mean, the Swiss label was very strong and emphasized. And if you talk to the manager and ex-manager, they always said, no, we had all these audits all the time. I mean, our products were clean, and then they have one-time use keys and all that. Yeah, so it's still a bit unclear for which services at the end they really were working for. I mean, there's a hint to the CIA, but we just see there were weak products.
So when you're emphasizing now the Swissness of these companies, and since they are also were doing harm to the Swiss state, so there is one question here in the chat. If it would be possible, or if they are punishable here in Switzerland, since they harmed the Swiss state. Do you know?
No, since we have hints, but not obvious enough evidence that we felt this is something that is ready to go public. And thus we cannot elaborate on if it proves to be the case that OmniSec has deliberately acted as a service in service of some foreign agency. Go ahead.
InfoGuard or OmniSec, I mean, we ask us the question whether they are victims, whether they were bribed by the CIA or just like trying to collaborate actively with the CIA. So you don't really know this stage of collaboration, and maybe they have to keep up the business as well. So or maybe they didn't know. It could happen as well.
Yeah. The picture is not as clear as we wished it.
I have to interrupt you since we're running out of time.
Sorry.
Actually, the channel here, it would be full of more questions for you. It's a super interesting topic, which seems to also raise even more questions. So are you somewhere reachable during Winter Congress where people can ask you? Would you know, or can you tell us how we can reach out for more questions for you?
Well, can we have some virtual separate room?
Yes, you can. Well, you can go on the virtual world.
Okay.
But we discussed this before that you said you haven't not tried out. So it would be very cool, since there are so many more people, if we could meet in the Winter Congress world in the lounge to keep on discussing.
All right.
So that's the lounge.
Yes.
And okay, I'll do get that.
All right. See you there in a minute. And thank you everyone for watching. And thank you again for the talk.